ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Well, it's been the biggest issue for most Australians and the greatest difficulty for the government over the past 3 years, cost of living. Soaring prices for everything from insurance to housing, the 12 interest rate rises along the way, of course, everyone has felt it, especially incumbent governments punished by angry voters. In every developed country that's had an election over the past year, incumbents have lost on average about 7 points. Here, the Albanese government hasn't lost that much ground, but it has been trailing in the polls. And with an election due by mid-May, it's been hoping for some better economic news. Well, this week that came, with inflation falling further than was expected. There are always a whole bunch of different inflation numbers to track, but the most important one, underlying inflation, fell from 3.6 down to 3.2%. Now, that's getting pretty close to the Reserve Bank's target zone of 2 to 3%. And it makes it far more likely that the RBA will make its first rate cut when it meets on February 18. Now, obviously, the Prime Minister would dearly love an interest rate cut before he sends voters to the polls. An election must be held on or before May 17. So, what will the RBA do? What are the arguments for and against cutting interest rates in February? And has the so-called soft landing approach of the government and the RBA been vindicated? Or has it taken far too long to reach this point? That's what I'm keen to explore. I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country and Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Well, Lucy Ellis was an assistant governor at the Reserve Bank for many years, is now chief economist at Westpac and joins me now. Great to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks very much, David. Great to be here.
So, look, you would have been at the Reserve Bank many times when the inflation numbers come in. When these sort of figures came in on Wednesday, how would they have gone down, do you think, at the bank?
Well, I think it would have been a pleasant surprise for them. Their November forecast round had a number for trimmed mean inflation that was 3.4%, it actually came in at 3.2. So another way of thinking about it is they were expecting a 0.7 in the quarterly number, they got a 0.5. That was even a little bit smaller than what we were expecting at Westpac. So that was a pretty good set of numbers for them. The underlying detail was really pleasing. In particular, the housing-related inflation has come off a bit faster than a lot of people expected. And we think that's got legs for subsequent quarters. We think that that means that there'll be a slightly lower rate of inflation also in those housing-related components in March quarter. So it's actually a pretty good set of results in terms of what the Reserve Bank's trying to achieve.
I mean, the housing numbers were good. Inflation on basics like food and so on came down as well. But services inflation is still a little bit higher. Is that right?
Well, services inflation is higher than goods inflation, but that's not unusual. What the Reserve Bank isn't trying to achieve inflation in every category between 2 and 3%. It's trying to achieve overall inflation at 2 or 3%. And again, I think looking at some of the things where inflation is still high, like insurance, like housing, they're all on a downward trajectory. And in many ways, they're all downstream from the original pandemic cost. One of the reasons why insurance inflation has been so high was the cost of repairing cars and repairing houses was growing quickly. And as that's rolled over, then with a lag, you would expect the rate of increase in insurance premiums to roll over.
So that's interesting. We shouldn't get hung up on a particular item within the basket. You know, services inflation might be high, but we shouldn't get hung up on that.
Look, and you'll certainly hear a lot of that kind of conversation as we get closer and closer to target. There'll be the, oh, yes, that component is too high. You know, the Reserve Bank is mandated to target overall inflation, and it uses overall trimmed mean inflation as the best single indicator of the underlying momentum in inflation. But you don't want to get too hung up on, well, you know, this thing went up. I mean, there'll always be volatile things like fruit and vegetables. I mean, one of the strongest increases in the most recent quarter was lamb and goat. Well, we're not going to have lamb and goat prices going up even further the next quarter and the quarter after that. Mm. These are just, you know, a lot of food prices can be quite volatile. So, you know, you have to look at the overall picture. Yes, the detail matters, but a large part of the reason the detail matters is understanding what that means for the next quarter and the quarter after that.
So a better than expected figure then for the final 3 months of last year. This has shifted the view of many who are observing this, including your own, as to yes. when we will see a rate cut. How confident are you we'll see one in February?
Look, you could never be 100% confident in these things. It is a fine balance. The Reserve Bank be weighing up the better than expected inflation numbers and the increasing evidence that inflation is indeed on track to come back to target as they wanted. But they're also going to be mindful that the labour market ended up quite a bit stronger than they thought.
So that's weighing against this, that you've still yes. got a pretty tight jobs market. That typically means wages are being pushed up.
Well, the really interesting thing at the moment is wages are not being pushed up. Wages growth undershot what the Reserve Bank was expecting, both in the wage price index numbers and the national accounts
numbers.
How
is that? How do you explain that, given, you know, unemployment is still pretty low?
Well, I mean, isn't it a fantastic result that we've been able to keep in unemployment, you know, around 4% or below for an extended period? I mean, the last time that happened, I was in preschool. And I think what is going on is the shock of the pandemic has just been enough to switch things around so that we can maybe sustain a lower rate of unemployment and still have inflation sustained in the target range. Now, you know, the RBA isn't fully convinced of that, and to be fair, neither am I. You can never really be sure what the sustainable rate of unemployment is that keeps inflation steady at target.
This is the technical term NARU, isn't it?
Yes, the NARU. But so the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment. I mean, I think it's important to be aware that the way the Reserve Bank's thinking about it at the moment, it's not so much whether inflation's picking up or falling that tells them whether they're at that sustainable rate, but whether inflation is above target or below. There's some technical reasons for that that I won't go into here, but, you know, for quite some time they've been interpreting the previously strong wages growth and the previously very high rates of inflation as evidence that the sustainable rate of unemployment was something around 4.5%. And I think what this is telling us is maybe it's a bit lower than that.
So they might rework their own number on that, do you think?
I think it's possible. Certainly at least a little bit. Maybe not, you know, not all the way down to 4%, but I think it would be very hard. You know, I know how those models work, and it would be very hard for them not to conclude that maybe the labour market wasn't quite as tight as they thought. But we still have to acknowledge that it is tighter than normal. And it hasn't actually gotten any looser over the course of the second half of last year.
So that tight jobs market could be a factor that weighs against cutting rates in the next few weeks. What about the Aussie dollar? Because, I mean, these inflation figures are for the final 3 months of the year. Since then, in January, we've seen the Aussie dollar cop it. What does that do to the thinking of the Reserve Bank?
Well, the Australian dollar has declined against the US dollar, but when the Reserve Bank looks at these things, it looks at a broader range of currencies and it publishes what it calls the trade weighted index that covers all the currencies that we trade, you know, where the countries we trade most with. And of course, our biggest trading partner is China. The US is a very distant second at the moment with only about 13% of our total trade. And so when you think about the impact on the economy, you know, the Chinese numbers matter as a lot as well. And of course, you know, we haven't depreciated as much against the Chinese currency, and you know, Chinese goods goods being imported into Australia are actually not increasing in price much because China is experiencing more or less deflation. And so the other thing to realise is, yes, imported goods might be a bit more expensive, you know, to the extent they're priced in US dollars and then sold into, you know, into Australia at a higher Australian dollar price. And of course, it's very expensive to go on holiday in the US versus somewhere like Japan when exchange rates are where they are at the moment. But the overall effect on inflation is pretty small. Okay. The rule of thumb the RBA would use is, roughly speaking, a 10% sustained decline in the Australian dollar on a trade-weighted basis, not just against the US dollar, would give you about a 1% increase in the price level over a run of years. So it's actually, you know, what we've seen so far shouldn't change the inflation outlook too much.
Okay, that's interesting. So look, when we look at how we've tackled this inflation issue over recent years, I remember back in, was it 2022, early 22, when inflation really took off, the then Reserve Bank Governor Phil Lowe started talking about this narrow path,
yes,
right, that we wanted to chart, that was to get inflation back down without driving up unemployment or causing recession. Government obviously wanted this sort of soft landing, as they called it, as well. What we're now seeing, does that tell us that this approach has worked?
Well, I still think it's a little bit too soon to say, but based on what we know so far, I do think that strategy's been vindicated. We've had this very resilient labour market. The reason the Reserve Bank took that view was twofold. One was we'd managed to get unemployment down a lot lower than where it had been pre-pandemic, whereas other countries had hit multi-decade lows in their unemployment rate just before the pandemic, so they knew they could get back there again. We hadn't, and so to get there after the pandemic, we wanted to kind of hold on to those gains. And we've managed to do that so far. You look at countries that went a bit more aggressive and then reversed faster, like Canada, like New Zealand.
You mean more aggressive in lifting rates?
Correct. Mm. They're really, they've really seen a much sort of worse outcome on their labour market. So to the extent that's what the RBA was trying to achieve, so far that's played out as they would have hoped. The other element of that strategy was there was just a sense, and the then governor did articulate this at the time, and there's material that's been released under FOI that highlights this, is you've got to move policy before you've got inflation back at target. You've got to start cutting rates before you know you've achieved your goal, because monetary policy affects the economy with a lag.
It takes time.
And so that means if you wait until inflation's all the way back to target, you've waited too long and you've over tightened. And so the question is, if you go much more aggressive and you do what some of the other countries around the world have done and raise rates even more than we did, you do run the risk that you miss the moment to start cutting rates again, because you've got to do that well before you've actually reached the target.
Does this suggest that the Australian approach has been unique and possibly uniquely successful?
Look, I don't, particularly given I was there at the time, I don't want to claim victory in that way. But I do think, there was a logic to what the RBA did, and they did get a lot of criticism at the time.
Yeah.
Why can't you be more like New Zealand? Why can't you be more like Canada? But I think if you look at what's happened to the labour market since then, I mean, there's a lot of other things going on. In many ways, the expansion of the care economy has kind of filled the gap. And I think had that not happened, maybe we would have had a much weaker labour market and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
But some have argued, though, that if we had gone harder on interest rates and indeed curbing government spending, we would have tackled inflation a whole lot earlier. We wouldn't have, all felt the pain for as long as we have. What do you say to that?
Well, I think so much of the inflation surge that we saw was related to the pandemic and the supply chain disruptions. At the margin, every extra dollar added some more demand, and so you can make the case that whether it was higher government spending or higher something else, that would have been an issue. But the reality is, the cycle in inflation in Australia wasn't that different from other countries. It was just a bit later. Mm. We were later to open up, so we were later to see the increase. Where I think there is something that is quite distinct to Australia is we were also much later to see the increase in energy prices, and we haven't seen an unwind. So there's some Australian specific things going on with our energy system that have kept energy prices high relative to what they would have been had there not been the subsidies that we've had.
So the question is, so what should happen now? We'll see what the Reserve Bank does. Obviously growing expectation they'll cut in February. But what about government spending? Is there still a case for more cost of living relief, more energy rebates and so on? Or is that time passed? Should they now be winding all that back?
Well, with the energy rebates, one of the aspects that we have to be aware of is that once those unwind, the cost of electricity that people will pay will go up quite a bit. Mm. And so, you know, I can certainly imagine that governments would want to maybe keep extending that a bit until we kind of catch the downswing. But, you know, the
especially
real issue,
with an election in the offing, I would suggest as well.
Well, they expire after that. Yeah, so, right. So that's really a next parliamentary term issue. But we do have a high cost of electricity and a high cost of energy in this country. And that's going to be a medium-term issue. So it's a short-term issue in terms of people's cost of living, but it's also a medium-term issue in terms of what industries we want to attract and what our overall rate of inflation is going to be moving forward.
Okay, so if they did another round of energy rebate relief, right, for the next financial year, would that help or hurt the challenge with inflation?
Well, measured inflation would then therefore not kick up. I mean,
the
all our forecasts,
rate.
Yeah, the headline inflation, you know, working on the assumption that those subsidies unwind as announced, then you have a kick up in headline inflation when that happens. And that's in everybody's forecasts. So obviously, you know, if people's electricity bills are not that high and that it's extended, you know, obviously measured inflation through this year won't kick up in the way that everyone currently expects. There's also a little bit of a second round effect because, of course, so many prices are indexed to the previous year's inflation. Mm. So if you do manipulate headline inflation, there is a little bit of a second round effect the following year. But
various,
of course, we've got to remember
government payments are linked to it and so on.
That's right. Mm. And but we've also got to remember that what that does is it does put a bit more money in people's pockets. Mm. You know, one of the things that has been unusual about the Australian experience is just how much household incomes got squeezed. I mean, one of the reasons why we think the economy is going to grow a bit from here is just as inflation comes down, more of people's dollar income translates into real purchasing power growth. And so, you know, the same growth, you know, roughly the same growth in dollar incomes translates into real income growth, and you get a bit more real spending that way. And so putting even more dollars into people's pockets in real terms does boost demand a bit. And so the real question is the supply side of the economy healing quickly enough in order to ensure that that doesn't cause further demand-related pressures on inflation? We think that the supply side is healing, but, you know, the Reserve Bank is nervous about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, that raises the question, aside from another round of energy bill relief, what about net government spending, total government spending? Mm. You know, growth is barely there. I think it's, what, 0.8% annually at the moment. In per capita terms, it's going backwards. Should government spending in net levels be lowered or remain where it is?
Look, I think that's a matter for you know, government priorities. And the thing I'd highlight is they need to think about sort of the net. So it's not just about what they're spending, but it's also what they're raking in. Mm. And, you know, one thing we do know is that the corporate tax receipts will be stronger, you know, precisely because the dollar is a bit lower and because iron ore prices have stayed higher than what Treasury typically assumes when they put budgets together. So that means there'll be more tax revenue. And so the question is, you know, if they bank that, well, then that's actually a tighter fiscal policy than what everybody expected.
Yeah, well, they'd certainly be hoping for any upside surprise there on the commodity price. Look, finally, and coming back to the Reserve Bank's decision that's coming, you've made some interesting points too about the change in the board that's looming as well, because this will be the final meeting of the current board before the changes under the government's restructure. How will that play out in terms of the decision making on interest rates?
One thing I do know is that the Reserve Bank board has always done what's right in terms of their mandate and not gotten too hung up on things like election timing. If it's time to go, they go. If it's time to hold, they hold.
And just on that, so you're genuinely saying they will ignore the political noise, cacophony around them with an election looming and the government's, you know, clear desire for a rate cut. They genuinely ignore all that?
Well, you just have to look at past decisions. I mean, they haven't resiled from moving when they needed to move, if that's what the data and their mandate required them to do. It's just simply on that month-to-month timing this time around, and this is probably the first time where I've actually felt that those tactics mattered. It's just as if they don't go in February, then going in April does sort of make it look like the government stack the board, and that's kind of not a lot, you know, to get the result they wanted. So if it's not February, it's May, just so that you don't have that, oh, the new people come in, and then the minute, like literally days after they start on the board, they cut rates, which the previous board wouldn't do. It, just the tactics of that and the optics of that are unattractive.
So that's interesting. It would look more independent to do it in February.
In some ways, that's true, yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, look, whether we actually get two meetings before the election, I suppose, is up to when the election is, and that's entirely up to the Prime Minister, we will see. But it sounds like we are going to see some good news in the coming months on the interest rate front. That's fair to say.
Yeah, so, you know, I did change my mind about when the first rate cut will be. I did previously think it was going to be May, but the inflation data was enough to tip me back over the line. Mm. You can never completely rule out, you know, you can never be 100% certain about these timing things, just partly because of the flow of data and in particular at the moment because of this issue around the much more resilient labour market. But I think everyone can be confident that there will be a rate cut in the first half of this year. I think the most likely timing is February for the first cut. You know, other people still think otherwise, although most people who watch the RBA closely are saying, OK, that was enough to tip us back over to February.
Lucy Ellis, terrific to get your insights. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're very welcome, David. Thanks.
All right, well, drop us a line if you have any thoughts on the podcast, insiders@abc.net.au. We're back on Sunday with our first Insiders for the year, so hope to see you then. Bye for now.
Making us all feel very excited about being here.